hello and welcome to another edition of the Hermeneutics Podcast. I'm your host, Nahum O'Brien, and this is the program dedicated to the art and science of biblical interpretation. On today's episode, I would like to pick back up where we left off nearly 2 years ago in our study of the history of hermeneutics. Previously, we were dealing with the rabbinic age, and we're taking a look at the seven exegetical rules developed by Rabbi Hillel. Now, by way of review, those seven rules are 1, light and heavy, 2, equivalence, 3, deduction from special to general, 4, an inference from several passages, 5, inference from the general to the special, 6, analogy of another passage, and 7, an inference from the context. Now, in the previous episode dealing with the history of hermeneutics, I covered the first three rules of Hillel. That is episode 54 for those of you who want to go back and review. Today, I would like to talk about the fourth exegetical rule of Hillel, which is an inference from several passages. Kaiser and Silva explain, quote, "This rule is similar to the previous rule, only here it is strengthened by giving two examples or two verses for the general principle," end quote. They find an example from Exodus chapter 21, verses 26 and 27. "When a man strikes the eye of his slave, male or female, and destroys it, he shall let the slave go free because of his eye. If he knocks out the tooth of his slave, male or female, he shall let the slave go free because of his tooth." Kaiser and Silva say, quote, "Exodus 21, 26 through 27 provided that a slave that had his eye or tooth destroyed could go free. By analogy, this rule could be extended to all other parts of the body." Farrar notes that the rule would also allow a third text to help determine the meaning of two other texts. For example, if two passages of Scripture appear to be contradicting, a third text may shed light upon and resolve that apparent contradiction. For example, Rabbi Ishmael notes that an apparent contradiction exists between Exodus chapter 19, verse 20, and Exodus chapter 20, verse 22. Exodus 19, 20 reads, "The Lord came down on Mount Sinai to the top of the mountain, and the Lord called Moses to the top of the mountain, and Moses went up." Exodus chapter 19, verse 20 clearly states that the Lord came down onto Mount Sinai. Yet in Exodus chapter 20, verse 22, we read, "And the Lord said to Moses, Thus you shall say to the people of Israel, You have seen for yourselves that I have talked with you from heaven." So, did the Lord come down, or did the Lord speak to the people of Israel from heaven? According to Rabbi Ishmael, quote, a third verse comes and resolves the contradiction, end quote. The verse which Rabbi Ishmael refers to is Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 36. "Out of heaven he let you hear his voice, that he might discipline you. And on earth he let you see his great fire, and you heard his words out of the midst of the fire." So then, the apparent contradiction is resolved by a third verse. In some sense, the rule of an inference from several passages is but an early form of the principle which we have, Scripture interpreting Scripture. Or as Charles Spurgeon famously declared, quote, "Scripture is the best interpreter of Scripture," end quote. However, as we noted previously, even good principles can be misused and abused. In his book entitled History of Interpretation, Frederick Farrar provides one especially horrific example of a rabbinical abuse of Rules 2 and 4. The example that Farrar gives concerns the dismissal of a Hebrew slave. Exodus chapter 21, 1 through 6 states, "Now these are the rules that you shall set before them. When you buy a Hebrew slave, he shall serve 6 years, and in the seventh he shall go free for nothing. If he comes in single, he shall go out single. If he comes in married, then his wife shall go out with him. If his master gives him a wife and she bears him sons and daughters, the wife and children shall be her master's, and he shall go out alone. But if the slave plainly says, I love my master, my wife, and my children, I will not go out free. Then his master shall bring him to God, and he shall bring him to the door, or the doorpost, and his master shall bore his ear through with an awl, and he shall be his slave forever. The law concerning the dismissal of a Hebrew slave contained a provision that allowed the slave to remain in the master's service. In context, it would seem that this would prevent the forced breakup of families. However, this provision can also be viewed as somewhat damaging to the master. How so? Well, as Farrar notes, quote, it was often burdensome to retain a Hebrew slave in the sabbatical year, end quote. Simply stated, it could be viewed as being bad for business. If a Hebrew slave was retained throughout a sabbatical year, the time when fields were to be left alone, the cost of retaining that slave might outweigh the benefit if the slave was unable to work the fields, for example. Retaining the slave would cost the master more money. Knowing this, the Jews would apparently look for exceptions to this rule, exceptions that would permit the master to dismiss the slave even though the slave desired to stay. Thus, the rabbis turned to what Farrar refers to as casuistry, which means the use of clever but unsound reasoning. As we will see, the rabbis will twist the meaning of the text with skillful cleverness. The way they do this is, first, the second rule of Hillel is used to connect Exodus chapter 21, 1-6, with Deuteronomy chapter 15, 16-17, which reads, but if he says to you, I will not go out from you, because he loves you and your household, since he is well off with you, then you shall take an awl and put it through his ear into the door, and he shall be your slave forever. There is no harm in connecting these two passages, as it is a legitimate connection established by the context of each passage. The error occurs when the interpreters move on to the fourth rule of Hillel, in which principles can be developed from two or more passages. Farrar notes four principles that were developed as exceptions to the rule. The first is that the master must be married and have children. The Talmud states, quote, if the slave has a wife and children, and his master does not have a wife and children, he is not pierced, as it is stated, because he loves you and your house. End quote. What is their reasoning? Well, the Talmud continues, quote, the word house is referring to a wife and children, and therefore, if the master does not have a wife and children, the verse cannot be fulfilled, and the slave is not pierced. End quote. Did you notice the twist? The two passages are combined, and principles are developed from the combination of the two. Thus, even though Exodus 21, 1-6 makes no mention of a master's marital and/or family status, an exception is granted based on the phrase, your house, in Deuteronomy 15, 16. They surmise that house must refer to both wife and children. Therefore, technically, if a master does not have a wife and children, he did not have a house. And if he did not have a house, the master could release the slave even if the slave wanted to remain. Secondly, the Talmud held that if the slave does not have a wife and children, he can be lawfully released. Note that Deuteronomy 15:16 makes no mention of the slave's marital and/or family status. Nevertheless, as the Talmud notes, quote, if a master has a wife and children, and he, the slave, does not have a wife and children, he is not pierced, as it is stated, I love my master, my wife, and my children, from Exodus chapter 21, verse 5, end quote. Thus, if both the master and slave did not have both a wife and children, then the slave could be released, even if he wanted to stay. The third and fourth exceptions that the rabbis make are even more twisted. They focus on the phrase, since he is well off with you, that is found in Deuteronomy chapter 15, verse 16. The third exception states that if the slave loves the master, but the master does not love the slave, then the slave could be released. The Talmud argues that since he is well off with you, quote, indicates that it is good for both of them to be with each other, end quote. Additionally, the Talmud notes, quote, if he is ill, he is not pierced, as it is stated, because he fares well with you, which excludes a sick person, end quote. The Talmud even goes on to say that if the slave is well, but the master is ill, then the slave could be released, even though he may desire to stay. So imagine being a slave who desires to remain a slave in order to remain united with one's family, only to be dismissed unlawfully due to an erroneous exception deduced by a crafty interpreter based upon the greed or convenience of the master. Farrar says of the interpreter, quote, by mishandling the letter, he purposely and for his own benefit destroys the spirit. Instead of a noble and religious explanation of the intention of the lawgiver, he supplies us with an excuse for cruel and selfish convenience, end quote. I want to reiterate here that Hillel's rules are not bad rules. Rather, the real issue is the twisting and abuse of the rules by men. As I said before, even good rules of interpretation can be misused and or abused.